This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. Pleased you're starting your week with us. Hope those of you who are fathers had a great Father's Day. And we start our week with Dr. Olena Allen, the Dean of the LSU Law Center. A reminder that our show originates from Investar Tower in Baton Rouge, and the signature sponsorship is from the Mayor President's Office of East Baton Rouge Parish. Your numbers, 877-217-5757. That's the number, 877-217-5757, and email to talk@talklouisiana.org. Robin Dowes, our producer, and good morning, Dr. Allen. Good to see you, Dean.
Good morning, Jim. Thanks so much for having me.
And it's been a year now. How are things going at the Law Center?
Things are going very well. We have a lot of exciting things happening at the Law Center. Right now, we have students in Lyon, France, for the 30th year of the program, where they are learning about international and comparative law, I think at a time where it's really, really important.
Well, I think if I were dean, I'd be in France with them.
I know. I'm missing out. It's too bad.
Well, you're here in Baton Rouge, and we're glad you're here with us. And it's a holiday on campus, isn't it? Juneteenth? Aren't we celebrating Juneteenth all over the city this week? But I, at any rate, Dr. Allen, for those of us who might have missed her first appearance on this show and also may not have known her backstory, she graduated magna cum laude from Loyola University, New Orleans, bachelor's degree, graduate of the Yale Law School, where she was the articles editor of the Yale Journal of Regulation, and she served as a law clerk for Federal Judge Samuel Mays. So she knows her way around, and she came this way from other places, as often is the case, and she served as interim dean and professor of law at the University of Arkansas, Fayetteville, another fine SEC institution. How does LSU compare with its law center with other schools, not only in this region, but across the country?
Well, we're very unique because of the civil law system here in Louisiana, and so all of our students get some exposure to the civil law, which makes us unique among every other law school in the country.
Sometimes people like David Vitter, he was a Rhodes Scholar, went to Harvard, but he came back to Tulane for his law education because he wanted to practice law in Louisiana. Sometimes that's the case. You did it the other way around.
I did. And indeed I did. And here I am, and I'm learning all of the wonderful things about the civil law, and I'm thrilled to be back.
Well, what are the major distinctions when between practicing law in Louisiana and in other places based on our unique system?
Well, you know, I think when you talk to practicing lawyers, they will tell you honestly not that much. But if you want to practice here, you have to learn the civil law because you have to pass the Louisiana bar, which is one of the most unique and hardest in the country.
And because of that,
and nobody does it better than LSU. We had a 92% bar passage rate. And so if you want to pass Louisiana bar, this is like the place to come learn the law.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not picking on any school, but when we have these measurements of supposedly a greatness of law schools, LSU is usually second in the state behind Tulane based on U.S. News and World Report.
Right.
But our students at LSU perform generally better than the Tulane students on the Louisiana bar, don't they?
They do, by a wide margin.
And I've said this before, and sometimes people say, well, a lot of the Tulane students go back home. They have a huge preponderance of students who practice law in other states. But still, they have a lot in Louisiana, but that says something. But the mission of a law school, some would say, is far more than getting students to pass the bar, but it is one significant measurement. How significant is it?
I mean, I think it's a huge measure because the cost of a legal education is skyrocketing, and you want your graduates to be able to immediately graduate, pass the bar, and start earning income. So I think for students, it's really important. I think for the community, it's really important.
877-217-5757 and talk@talklouisiana.org. And I figured this one would come first from Hal and Monroe about ethics of lawyers. This is now a big issue because of what's happening on the Supreme Court. It seems that perhaps lawyers sometimes have issues and perhaps don't have the requisite pushback when there are questions. What's your take on whether or not we have a real problem in this area in our country right now?
Well, I think that in Louisiana, there's a robust judicial code for justices. And I think it's a great one. And so I don't think we have a problem in the state of Louisiana. I think that there have been lots of stories about the judicial code for the Supreme Court justices, and I think they are moving towards more disclosure. And I think the more transparency they have with respect to those disclosures, the better for the country.
And you went to Yale, as did many other Supreme Court justices, one of whom is Clarence Thomas. And he's done some things on the court that it's surprising in 33 years on the court, he hasn't gotten more scrutiny. It would seem that as important as the Supreme Court is, that perhaps this is long overdue.
I think it is long overdue, and I think some progress is going to be made in that area.
And you noted that one of your other Yale alums of the Law Center there, and not only former President Clinton, but his wife, Hillary Rodham Clinton, and when you had your reunion last year, she's from a different class, like 30 years before you, but she was there as well, wasn't she?
She did. She was the keynote speaker, and she gave her thoughts about the state of politics right now. Specifically, she emphasized that we're in a time where performance seems to matter more than substance, in her view. And she was eloquent and lovely, and at the end, she was very gracious and took a selfie with me and my daughter, which was the highlight of my reunion experience.
Your 20th, right?
Correct.
Was it her 50th?
It was her 50th.
50th.
But she didn't look that old.
Well, Hillary Clinton has been around for a long time, and she and Bill met at law school, and shall we say, they've had great success, and she came within an eyelash of winning the presidency of the United States. We still have a high proportion of lawyers who get into politics and serve at the highest levels. And the Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives is James Michael Johnson, graduate of the LSU Law Center. Is a law education helpful for somebody who wants to be a lawmaker?
I would almost say it should be vital. So yes, absolutely. I think that lawyers make the best lawmakers because they understand not only the law, but the policy implications of the laws that they're passing. And so I think it's a great training for people who want a future in politics. And LSU, the former governor of the state, was also an LSU graduate, the Speaker of the House.
He was a classmate of Johnson.
Yeah, the Speaker of the House in Virginia is a LSU law graduate. So we have
quite a group of talented alums.
Absolutely.
How's the diversity on campus now?
The incoming class for 2027 hopefully will be about 25% diverse. That's our hope.
And faculty?
We just hired a slew of new faculty. We hired 9 new faculty members and, let's see, about 45% diverse.
And through the years, when I was in school, I know that you could get into law school relatively easy. When I was an undergraduate, I didn't try then, but the the attrition rate was quite high, shall we say. About half the class or more would flunk out in the first year. Now it's different. You have to really be special to get in, I understand, but you don't have as many people who go by the wayside. Is that an accurate summation of where we are?
That is absolutely accurate. And again, it goes back to the cost. When in-state tuition is roughly $25,000, you want to make sure that you're admitting students who can be successful, because if they aren't, the ramifications for them and the future debt that they're saddled with no degree, is really a hardship.
Well, we have Collis Temple, who's on the LSU board, who admitted on this show that he was one of those who didn't make it when he tried to go to LSU Law School, but he got an MBA. It's not for everybody, either as a student or as a practitioner. And what makes a good lawyer?
I think being able to see shades of gray. I think if you are too binary in your thinking, then the law will be very hard for you, because often the answer is, it depends. And so my oldest son right now is thinking about being a lawyer, and he's in a pre-law program, and he was asking me about that same question. And I said, you really need to get comfortable with nuance, and you need to get comfortable with it can depend on A, it can depend on B, and uncertainty.
But it's a tough job, and you're dealing with clients who have problems, and their problems become your problems, and then you have to deal with a court system that is imperfect. It's a great system in this country, but it is imperfect. Sometimes guilty people get away, and sometimes innocent people get convicted. So I would say, I don't know, but I would think it's a high-pressure profession.
Indeed it is. And the rates of substance abuse among lawyers sort of backs that up.
Do you have any kind of instruction in school about those kinds of matters beyond torts and that sort of thing, about the pressures that are involved in being an attorney?
Absolutely. We are one of a handful of schools that has a permanent mental health professional at the law school to help students with any mental health issues they may have.
You're good. You stopped right on cue. We'll be back and let Dean Allen pick up more with her after this. This is Jim Inkster, and you are listening to Talk Louisiana. A few more minutes with Dean Alina Allen of the LSU Law Center, the first African-American dean of the LSU Law Center, which also has a African-American who is president of the university. So LSU has moved in a good direction in that way, and Dean Allen is, of course, a talented person, and LSU is good to have somebody of her pedigree, and she has had her work published in many places all across the country. I'm looking North Carolina Law Review, Fordham Law Review, Ohio State, Cordoza Law Review, and you were named an American Society of Medicine Law and Ethics Health Scholar at the Center for Health Law Studies at St. Louis School of Law. So she has quite a background and was the interim dean at the University of Arkansas. And you were talking about the pressures of being a lawyer. A lot of people, they go through the 3 years, they pass the bar, they practice law, and then either they're not real satisfied with the job, but it's a job that generally has good dividends as far as compensation, so they may stay with it, or they burn out and they end up having other issues and can't do it anymore. How difficult is it to stay the course?
We have lots of alums who are still practicing 50 plus years later. So I think that a lot of our alums find satisfaction with practicing law, especially those that go back to their hometowns. We have lots of alums who go back to the more rural parishes, and they know everybody in the town, and they are their lawyer, mm-hmm. and that's been really gratifying for them.
877-217-5757. We'll take a call or two before we let Dean Allen go back to campus. But Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, Jim. Now, what would you say to someone, basically, I know our young people are so idealistic, and they run up against the reality of what the world is right now. I know the Supreme Court, my goodness, what a controversial and basically concerning amount of corruption, it seemed.
All right. Well, what about the overall theme that Phil expressed there?
So I think students have a wonderful ability to be idealistic and to imagine the world as it could be, not as it is right now. And most of our students come to the Law Center to make Louisiana better and to make the country better. And that means different things to different law students, but they're there because they want to make a difference.
Now, Tracy at the Capitol notes about the high court. I think it's evident that there's a ideological divide there, but it's the same old expression. Some lawyers believe that the Constitution is a living, breathing document. Justices do, and others believe that there is original intent, and whatever the founding fathers wanted, they should get based on a review of the evidence before them. Do you have a particular philosophy when it comes to that?
I think I said it depends, right? That's what lawyers do. And I think it depends on the issue and the circumstance. I think being a Supreme Court justice is a very hard job. And I honestly believe that each justice is doing the best that he or she can with tough issues. And I think reasonable minds can disagree on a lot of these issues.
And through the years, the court has made terrible decisions, as we know. Basically allowing slavery in this country, and as bad as some people believe it is now, it has been worse. So that's something to keep in mind. But there are those who believe that the Constitution is the Constitution, and whatever James Madison wanted, that's basically how it has to be reviewed. I remember Robert Bork didn't get on the court mainly because of that view, but others now probably have views that are quite similar to Justice Bork. Dan downtown. Dan, you're on the air with Dr. Allen. Good morning.
Good morning, Dean. Economist and other publications often refer to the U.S. Fifth Circuit as the most right-wing conservative court in the country. Does the law school present to students this problem with representing the have-nots of society against corporate Louisiana?
So I believe that we have a balanced legal education. We're not trying to indoctrinate a student into any viewpoint, but we do want to give them a full picture of the challenges that Louisianians face and the challenges that people across the country face. So I think our job is to present all sides of the issues to students and let students decide for themselves how to tackle the problems facing Louisiana and the country.
Thank you, Dan. And I do know that based on a discussion prior to the show with Dean Allen, that there is a grant in the works that LSU is striving to get that would provide low-income assistance or assistance for low-income taxpayers. How will this work, and are you optimistic this will happen?
So I am optimistic that this will happen. The low-income tax clinic would be one of many clinics that we have at LSU. We are also bringing online a business law clinic and a veterans clinic, and the veterans clinic was the brainchild of a law student. And so I think Brock is an example of one of the amazing now alums that we have who really care deeply about issues facing people in the community and came up with this idea, and we made it happen.
What's the biggest challenge the law profession faces right now?
I would say AI and how that's going to impact the practice of law going forward.
I'm sure at LSU you're on the cutting edge of that, but we really don't know. But how much do we know that can be provided to future lawyers as far as the world that is evolving on the AI front?
I don't think we know, but we can't bury our heads in the sand. And so we need to allow students to use AI to make their jobs easier. But we also need to make sure that AI isn't a crutch. So it's going to be a balance for us, but it's definitely something that we are going to expose students to.
Well, Dean Allen, thank you for coming in. I wish you could see her purple outfit today, but she is in LSU colors, and I gather based on the first year, you're quite pleased with the way things are going in Tigertown, for you anyway.
Well, Jim, you were worth missing France for, so thank you for having me.
Well, I really am feeling on top of the world. If somebody turns down a trip to France to be on this show, then God bless you. Come back soon and very soon. Thank you, Dean Allen.
Thank you, Jim.
Take care. And we're joined now by Tyler Bridges, the Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter, and he'll be complimented by Dane Sherman, professor at SLU. A few things happened since Tyler and I talked Friday when the big story at that time was the new configuration of the LSU board, and we will hit that. But Tyler, being the intrepid reporter that he is, before we get to other matters, he has the top story in the Advocate and Picayune today. Jobless benefits in Louisiana get reduction. New legislation lowers maximum amount of assistance. What's going on, Tyler Bridges?
Yeah, this is part of a conservative push we've seen across the country where conservative legislators are moving to reduce the number of weeks that somebody is unemployed is actually eligible for, the maximum number. Currently, Jim, if you're unemployed, you can qualify for unemployment for as long as 26 weeks. Remember, if you're unemployed, that means that you've been laid off, that you didn't quit the job. But under the bill by Representative Troy Romero, the maximum number of weeks that you could qualify would be 20, and it could go as low as 12, depending on what the unemployment rate is. And today, the rate is below 5%. So under this law, which takes effect on January 1st, you would only be eligible for as many as 12 weeks of unemployment insurance.
Well, on the higher education front, we just visited with Dean Alina Allen of the LSU Law Center. There may be some budget cuts in the offing. I know Governor Landry is surveying his options. Governor Edwards, when he left office, indicated things were good enough that this might not be a possibility and would be an unlikely event. What's going on that front, Tyler?
Well, the big question, Jim, and it's been out there for some time, is what's going to happen when the 0.45-cent sales tax increase passed by legislature and Governor John Bel Edwards in 2018? That is scheduled to roll off in mid-2025. And it provides about $500 million, $500 million a year. And we don't know whether the conservative governor and legislature are going to renew that 0.45 cent sales tax. One would think that they won't since they're conservatives, but that would be a budget hit to the budget. And one of the big places that gets hit when there is a cut in revenue or less revenue is higher education.
We're going to continue with Tyler, and we'll get Dane Sherman's take on what's happening on college campuses involving the budget right after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster, and you're listening to Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow producing, and your number is 877-217-5757. We're joined again by Tyler Bridges and Dane Sherman, who's at the campus of SLU, speaking as Citizen Sherman. But as Tyler noted, if the 0.45 cent sales tax goes away, as many believe it will, then there'll be a hole in the budget. And as we know, higher education is often the target. Constitutionally, there aren't many places to cut, and that's one of them. And during the Jindal years, King Alexander, the former president of LSU, said he had to make 13 budget cuts as a result of a money shortage. Now, Dane Sherman, are we headed for the Jindal situation, or are we going to be able to work this out? What's your read on this?
It's probably worse than Jindal. I'd like to say it's Jindal 2.0, but it's probably worse. There's two or three things happening at one time. As Tyler rightly notes, the half a penny, basically, for 0.45%, 0.45% is about to fall off the off in 2025. The same time, you've got the governor taking control of the boards of the chairmanships of all the higher ed. And then late last week, he sends word to the Board of Regents and says, y'all need to be ready for a $200 million to $250 million cut. I look at this as just a giant ploy. Not that they're not going to – I see no way in the world that the tax is ever going to be renewed. But it's a ploy now to soften up the higher ed leaders so they come 100% behind the Constitutional Convention as a fake way to save higher ed when it's all going to be a joke, and they're still going to cut them when it's all over. If we remember the Louisiana Grad Act, universities were promised that if they meet certain benchmarks, they wouldn't be cut. They met the benchmarks, they were still going to be cut. And I see this happening all over again, so the guy can soften up higher ed leaders to get this constitutional convention that no one knows anything about what's going to take place there, other than Jindal and a few billionaires, or close to billionaires.
Jindal or Governor Landry?
Excuse me, Landry.
Okay.
You know, the names are so, they're so intertwined at this point, it's hard to tell one from the other than one of them we haven't heard from in about 8 years.
Well, but we do know that Landry was not popular with the Jindal crowd, like Garrett Graves and Stephen Wagaspak and some of those, Ralph McAllister. They don't like Jeff Landry a lot, so... But at any rate, the governor may have to make some hard choices unless he wants to renew that sales tax, and conservatives generally don't like to do those kinds of things. But Tyler Bridges, at LSU, as you noted in your story over the weekend, the president of the university is seeking a pay raise and a contract extension. And I'm told he tried to get this before Jeff Landry took office and the board rejected that idea. But now Jeff Landry controls the board, so what does that mean as far as the future of the flagship university in Louisiana, based on what you know right now?
Well, I think from what I'm hearing within the LSU board, I think they were the outgoing board was inclined to extend the contract for Dr. Tate and also give him a pay hike, the feeling that his pay is not commensurate with presidents of other universities, a similar level. From what I'm hearing, the board's pretty happy with his job performance, and that they may have just been wanting to leave it to the incoming board that has now been appointed by Jeff Landry.
Dane, what do you make of his job performance?
You know, I don't see that he's setting the woods on fire. To be quite clear, I don't see that he's backed either students or faculty. Let's just take the drug issues at LSU. They've sent out flacks to basically deny what's happened at LSU. This has been covered in papers. The Reveille's covered it. Other places have covered it. You know, I just as soon see him, you know, go to a higher paying university somewhere else. The issue on these boards, though, and I think Tyler brought this out really well, that Moon Griffon, the radio guy, very far right, was apoplectic that that the Carmouche law firm got representation on higher ed boards. I'd like Tyler to comment on this. I don't see the boards changing that much from John Bel Edwards, but I think these boards definitely know who the new
all
boss
right.
is.
Well, Tyler did an exceptional story, and two Edwards appointees, they got their gigs back. Of course, they had to really work hard to do it, but they did it, and Jeff Landry allowed it. In Ramey Starnes, who backed Sean Wilson for governor, and Lee Mallett, they're back on. And you're right, Carmouche, who's a guy who likes suing oil companies, and some people believe this is a good thing, he's on. So, Tyler, what's going on here?
Yeah, of the seven people either reappointed or appointed by Governor Landry, the name that stood out for me, and I highlighted that in the story I wrote for The Advocate last week, was indeed John Carmouche. As you mentioned, he's with the Carmouche law firm in Baton Rouge, and they have been suing for a number of years oil and gas companies, blaming them for loss of the coast. And, you know, as I wrote in my story, John Carmouche is a boogeyman for oil and gas companies and indeed conservatives such as Moon Griffon. That board is very, very political, and those appointments are very political. And John Carmouche was a big donor to John Bel Edwards and helping him get elected. And then in 2023, he gave a lot of money to help get Jeff Landry appointed. And I think most people will conclude this is the reward. Lee Mallett had been appointed to the board originally by Bobby Jindal. And then he gave money to John Bel Edwards, and John Bel Edwards kept him on the board. And then he gave him the money last year to Jeff Landry. He has been reappointed. Now, Ramey Starnes, who you mentioned, has been a big Democratic lawyer, but he actually ended up backing Jeff Landry in last year's governor's race.
Well, he gave money to both, which is often done, by the way, in politics. I'm amazed at the number of people giving money in Baton Rouge to both the incumbent and the challenger, but that's politics, and these people, they like to keep their positions on boards. I do note that former governor of Alabama, Don Siegelman, went to jail for putting a campaign contributor on a board. And in Louisiana, it's business as usual, no matter who the governor is. And people say, are you going to put your enemies on the board, or are you going to put your friends? So is there anything particularly sinister about somebody making a contribution, Tyler, and getting a board seat?
Well, I think you can look at it and think it's not the right thing, but it is the political process, and we do have a system where people raise money from contributors. And as you said, who are you going to put on the board, an enemy or a friend? I guess in the end, what you want are people who are competent, whether they give money or not.
Dane, how do you see it?
I don't see it as a great scandal. I mean, it's gone on for so long. I never have completely understand how Don Siegelman ended up in prison, but he did. I think the bigger question is, if the governor has direct power over appointing the chair of these boards, is this going to affect SAC's accreditation statewide? I don't think that's been rightly addressed yet, but I suspect the check is in the mail.
877-217-5757. And now to the bombshell of Friday, Garrett Graves, five-term congressman from Baton Rouge, 5-0 in elections for the 6th District, decided not to take a sixth run at the district because it's now a majority black district and Cleo Fields is the favorite. So he has $4.3 million he's raised and he's all dressed up and no place to go unless he waits until 2026. Dane, does this mean he's running against Bill Cassidy? Is that what's happening here?
I think he's finished. And I think he's finished. I mean, maybe he goes to work for, you know, becomes a lobbyist for Exxon or some lobbyist in Washington. I think he's finished. And I think what's happened is, you brought it up earlier, in part, there's a gentle, bitter divide. And basically, what happened to Graves is he got on the wrong side of that. He got on the gentle side of that. And we saw what happened to Jindal. And Landry has, there's a term out there, the clownfish, referred to as the clownfish instead of the kingfish. Graves got clownfished by Landry, and I think he's done, at least for a very long time in Louisiana politics as elected official.
Well, he is 52, so he's a youngster by today's political standards, and he's a talented man, and he's got $4.3 million. I can't believe he would just say, I'm out of politics. Tyler, do you think he's weighing his options and there will be a next move, or is he going to just say, it's time for me to move on and do something else?
Well, Garrett Graves doesn't confide in me, but I am sure that he is keeping his options open, looking to run in 2026. He has said that he believes that the courts will end up throwing out this new map that has been created to allow Cleo Fields to get elected or somebody else from that, a black candidate from that sixth congressional district that Representative Graves currently represents. So I think it could be the new map could be thrown out and he could get back his district, or he could challenge Bill Cassidy in 2026.
Well, I would surmise that he's likely to go after Bill Cassidy in a closed primary, and he has something going for him. He voted to overturn the election of 2020, and he voted against the articles of impeachment. And Cassidy voted the other way and has caught the ire of the Trumpers, and the Trumpers still are a overwhelming majority among Republicans. So in a closed primary, Graves might be a real problem for the senior senator from Louisiana, William Morgan Cassidy. Graves' mentor, by the way, is Billy Tozan, who gave him his first job on Capitol Hill, and Friday was Tozan's 81st birthday, and I suspect the congressman called Tozan, wished him a happy birthday, and Billy Tozan, who told me a year ago that Garrett Graves was going to run against Bill Cassidy in 2026, probably told him, keep your powder dry and run against Cassidy and save the $4.3 million and see what happens. That's my guess. I could be wrong, but you never know. And we'll be back to spend some more time with two of the best, Tyler Bridges and Dane Sherman. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Dane Sherman and Tyler Bridges with us, and some people waiting in line. If you'd like to grab one open line, 877-217-5757. Let's go to Henry at the Country Club of Louisiana. Henry, you're on with Tyler and Dane. Hi, Henry.
Good morning, Mr. Jim, Mr. Tyler, Mr. Dane. Looky here, I was looking at Saturday morning's paper, and I see on the front page, Garrett Graves says this is going to cause permanent damage to Louisiana's great reputation and representation in Congress. For the life of me, I remember the words of the great daddy Dale Brown. You put a fist in a bucket of water, and you take it out, and what happens? It all fills in. I don't think we're going to miss them one bit. Thank you all very much.
Dane, is this a big blow to our state?
Absolutely not. I think it is greatly exaggerated by Graves. And look, Cleo Fields has experience, lots of it. He's already been in Washington. He's got incredible background in Louisiana politics. He may not do the right thing 100% of the time, but he'll do it 75% of the time. And Graves might have done it right 25% of the time. So I'm very happy with the direction the state's going. And oddly enough, that Landry backed the new district and the courts went that way. And that's going to be a good thing for Louisiana.
Tyler, picking up on what Dane just said, John Bel Edwards tried to get a second black majority district, couldn't do it. So Jeff Landry is the person who made this happen.
Politics often can be strange, and that is something that probably people wouldn't have predicted last year, that when Jeff Landry came into office, one of his first moves was to back a redistricting plan that indeed created a district that Cleo Fields right now is the favorite to win, although he's not the only candidate, and other candidates could get in there. But right now, it looks pretty good for Senator Fields.
Patrick in Innoswald Estates. Patrick, you're on Talk Louisiana with Dane Sherman and Tyler Bridges.
Hey, Jim, I agree with you. I think Eric Graves is going to run against Bill Cassidy in the future. I'm disappointed he didn't run against Cleo Fields. I think he could have won. So that gets to my question. I mean, Cleo Fields has a history of some shady things. We got the videotape of him accepting cash back in 97. I think it's safe to assume the guy is a corrupt politician.
All right. Well, by the way, a grand jury chose not to indict him, and they could have. Seven other people were indicted. I think nine other people, including former Governor Edwin Edwards. But he was not an unindicted co-conspirator. He said it was legal fees. I believe that was the explanation. And time has gone on. But that particular episode, and there is a video of it, Dane and Tyler, you know well that if it had been a race between Graves and Fields, we might have seen that a time or two on a television station.
Maybe 24/7.
You know, I wrote a book that got into that whole thing.
Yeah, bad bet on the bayou, right?
Yeah, I go into that story and depth and the anger of some of the prosecutors that Cleo Fields end up not being indicted by the U.S. attorney there. But he is proven to be a very, very skillful politician, and he not only was got this new congressional district that's tailor-made for him, but he has also made as named the chairman of the Senate and Governmental Affairs Committee. So, again, a very, very skillful politician. He's already been in Congress once, and he's the favorite to go back there.
And a listener notes, this is Tom on Bluebonnet, that he, Tom, hates to lose Senator Fields at the state capitol. He has been a force to be reckoned with there, particularly because he has the ear of the governor, doesn't he?
Yeah, and you know what I think is going to be interesting is, and I haven't checked this out, but I'm wondering if Gary Chambers is going to see this as a great opportunity to run for Senator Fields' seat.
Well, he tried running for the Senate and lost resoundingly to Regina Barrow. So Chambers, he's very good at getting headlines. He's not so good so far at winning elections, but he's a young man, and we shall see. David in Atlanta. David, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, gentlemen. Trump promised to eliminate tip income as income tax if elected president. I'd like to remind the Trump supporters, Trump also promised in 2016 to eliminate the carried interest rate where hedge fund managers make billions of dollars.
All right. Well, what about national politics and the impact on Louisiana? As we noted in the Republican ranks, there seems to be you're either with Trump or you're against him. And Bill Cassidy now, Tyler and Dane, is making every effort to get back in the good graces of Donald Trump. Will it work, Dane?
I think we've got two different voices going. I think we still have David in Atlanta. Okay, so the question is about nationalizing these local races. They're all going to be nationalized. It's just the way it is, and it's going to be a good. I think it's going to be a good fall for Trump in Louisiana. I don't know if that's going to be nationwide, but certainly Louisiana is a Trump state, and he is going to do extremely well in Louisiana this November.
Tyler?
Just the only thing I'm focused on is he is scheduled, former President Trump is scheduled to be in New Orleans for a fundraiser a week from tonight. I'm not yet sure whether he is indeed coming because remember that debate in Atlanta is 3 days afterwards. But we might see the former president in Louisiana very soon.
Steve in Baton Rouge. Steve, you're on with Tyler and Dane. Hi, Steve.
Hello. Hello, Jim. How you doing, Tyler and Dane? Look, y'all keep talking about Cassidy. Cassidy is the only senator in Washington, D.C. that's doing something for Louisiana. He's the one got to lose down the road. And also, Graves may decide to run for governor.
All right. Graves thought about running for governor last time, and he didn't. And then he got his buddy Stephen Wagespack to run, and it didn't work out real well. But Graves has options. I don't think we've heard the last of him. But as far as Cassidy, a listener notes, did vote for the infrastructure, which Louisiana has benefited immensely from. But all those votes, which some might believe are good votes, the vote to uphold the election, the vote to convict on the articles of impeachment, those might be good votes, but are they good political votes, Tyler and Dane? Tyler, let's start with you.
Well, it certainly has hurt Senator Cassidy, and if he is not reelected in 2026, I think we can point to his votes against Trump after having been a strong supporter of Trump in 2020. And Senator Cassidy points to Trump's refusal to accept his loss in 2020 presidential election and then the events on January 6th. And I think a lot of people would view his stance on Trump as very principled. But clearly, Senator Cassidy wants to keep his job, and we'll see whether he can regain his standing within among Republicans.
Dane, in an open primary, much different.
Yeah, he's going to have a hard time. I think Cassidy is, when you see the vitriol from his base every time he posts something on social media, he is definitely, even though he's done a lot of good stuff, he's like the infrastructure bill. He's made some votes that have not been great for Louisiana, but not necessarily doctrinaire. I think he has a hard time getting reelected.
It's always good to hear from both of you, gentlemen. Let's do it again soon. Thank you, Tyler. Thank you, Dane.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
We're joined now in the last few moments by a gentleman I know well. I have known this man for more than 40 years. He worked as a journalist here, as a videographer, graduate of LSU and Terra High School, grew up on Capitol Heights Avenue in Baton Rouge. Sid Champagne, who went off to Florida after working in Baton Rouge, Lake Charles, and Shreveport as a videographer. And for 34 years, he has been probably the top TV photographer in the great state of Florida. Sid Champagne, job well done, and Louisiana guy all the way. I wanted to thank you for your work. I'm sorry it didn't happen in Louisiana, but I know you're a legend of sorts in the Sunshine State.
Well, Jim, thank you very much, and thank you for your friendship. And to all the listeners there in Louisiana, hello from the Sunshine State of Florida, here out along the Space Coast. A few days from now, hopefully, the Boeing Starliner will splash, actually land on the land out west. And it's been a great run. And, Jim, you're a fine friend, and the listeners don't know what a solid guy you are. You've
well,
been a friend
you.
For a long time, and I've a Hall of Famer, LSU Hall of Famer.
Well, enough about me, but for those who do what you do, there can be probably no better gig than being involved with the space program, and you were there for all of those major events.
Oh, it's been a phenomenal run, and I'm still out here, and I will be doing still some video work out there at the Cape. Yes, it's what's been explosive the last few years is the commercial space program, SpaceX and Boeing. Now going to the International Space Station, and of course the Artemis project, America's return to the moon, which is necessary. You know, we now have a new space race between the United States and China that also wants to go to the moon. So we have the Artemis project. We also have Elon Musk's Starship. He wants to go to the moon. So it's just fascinating times here. And of course, I invite all the listeners, if you need a vacation, come to the Space Coast. Plenty to do, plenty to see, and it's amazing. I was in a restaurant one night, and people were getting up to go to the beach, and there was this young couple there with a couple of children, and I said, "Are you not going to go watch the launch? Is the launch tonight?" I said, "Yes," and they went out and saw it and had a great time and came back and said, "Thank you for telling us." That was just a wonderful, wonderful experience. But it's been a great run, Jim, and we both came from humble beginnings, and we've done quite well, and I'm very proud of you, and
all right.
I hope to see you soon.
Well, that's the deal. 34 years at WFTV for Sid Champagne. Thank you, Sid, and until tomorrow, stay safe, stay tuned.